Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, September 20th, 2018. The Speaker of the South Sudan National Assembly wants young people to promote peace.
I urge all South Sudanese to champion this peace. There's no any other person to champion it other than the people of South Sudan. So I urge all South Sudanese people, particularly the youth, to take this peace at heart, and they are the one to make the initiative to reach out.
And Ugandan pop star turned politician Bobby Wine returns home.
I got lucky that there was someone I knew who told me to go back peacefully. Otherwise, I think it would have been something more than that.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Speaker of the South Sudan's Transitional Legislative Assembly is calling on South Sudanese to support the revitalized peace deal. Anthony Lino Makana says all South Sudanese deserve to have peace. UNMISS Chief David Chaire says while fighting continues in parts of Equatoria, there has been a general reduction in violence across the country. Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba.
Speaking today at a public forum on peace at the University of Juba, Anthony Lino Makana said there can be no durable peace in South Sudan if people are not ready to accept one another as equal citizens.
I urge all South Sudanese to champion this peace. There's no any other person to champion it other than the people of South Sudan. So I urge all South Sudanese people, particularly the youth, to take this peace at heart, and they are the one to make the initiative to reach out to one another.
President Salva Kiir, SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar, and other opposition parties signed a revitalized peace deal in Addis Ababa last week to end nearly 5 years of conflict. Makana says the president signed the deal because peace is a right that every South Sudanese citizen deserves.
As we have right to water, right to life, and other rights, also as human beings we have right to peace, and so we must safeguard it. We would like to work hand in hand with the international community to ensure that peace prevails, and we want South Sudan to be a fountain of peace.
The United States, United Kingdom, and Norway, referred to as the South Sudan Troika, recently challenged the government and opposition parties to respect the deal they signed by ending the violence before expecting the international community to come in and help. David Shearer, the special representative of the UN Secretary General in South Sudan, says the United Nations is committed to supporting the parties implement the revitalized peace agreement for the sake of the South Sudanese people.
I've seen much of the human suffering. I've met people going without food, hiding in the bush because it's not safe to go home, and fearing for their very lives. I met a little girl who'd been shot through the stomach. In Leah, one woman talked about the horror of being raped. I've met children in Yei who struggle to stay in school because their parents are dead. And so I say that the people of South Sudan have a right to peace. They have a right to realise their dreams.
The UNMISS chief says he's travelling to the United Nations headquarters to take part in the UN General Assembly tomorrow in New York, where he will describe what he has seen in South Sudan.
So that the South Sudanese voices are heard at the highest level, so that we can guarantee that decisions that are made, first and foremost, have the best interests and serve the people of South Sudan. And I will reiterate this message of support when I travel to the United Nations.
Shearer signed the revitalized peace deal in Addis last week as a witness to the agreement. He says UNMISS will avail its resources across the country to make sure peace and reconciliation become a reality in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Manyang David Mayar in Juba.
South Sudan Embassy in Washington has a new ambassador. Philip Jadanatana presented his credentials to President Donald Trump on Monday. Ambassador Jada previously served as South Sudan's ambassador to Eritrea and South Africa. Jada is the third South Sudanese diplomat to head the country's embassy in Washington. Ambassador Jada, welcome to the United States. We are pleased to have you on our show.
Thank you very much, Tanzan. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, you just came to Washington. How was your meeting with President Donald Trump? What did he tell you?
Well, I presented my credentials to President Trump on Monday, and actually the actual presentation of the credentials in the United States here works a little bit different from other previous countries that I've presented credentials to. I mean, this is like the 10th president that I've presented my credentials to. Stated well, I started in Eritrea, then in South Africa, but in South Africa I was also a non-resident ambassador for 10 other countries. So the ceremony here, I could say, is not so much formal. It's actually really a ceremonial. The actual presentation takes place before you present your credentials to the president, and that's when you meet the chief of state protocol. That's where you sit down and you discuss about what you have and what you hope to achieve during your tenure of office. But when we went to present our credentials to President Trump, there were 12 of us, and I was number 11 on the line. So we were actually barely given a minute or two for each to present the credentials. So, yeah. But he was very nice. He welcomed me, and when I stepped forward and I shook his hands and I told him I had the honor of presenting my credentials as the South Sudan ambassador to the United States of America. And he said, welcome on board. I didn't hear you well. What country did you say that again? I said, South Sudan. And he said, oh, great country, beautiful country. And I hope that I will be able to work with you. You know, so he has been very nice. I was with my spouse, and he's also been very nice to my spouse. So overall, it was just a few, maybe a minute and 15 seconds, but it went pretty well.
Good. And how are U.S. relations with the South Sudan, given Juba's accusations that U.S. is working for regime change in Juba? What are your plans to improve these relations with U.S.?
Well, I just guess I need to really take you a little bit back, because during the same day after I presented my credentials, the White House hosted us for lunch, and then a telephone call came through telling us that now the new assistant secretary for state for Africa was being sworn in, and I was invited to go and attend the swearing in. So we were all there. That was a function that was well attended, and I got a chance to briefly chat with the new assistant secretary for Africa, and then there was a follow-up meeting yesterday in which I met him for about half an hour, and I was still impressed when he gave his speech accepting the post, and he said two important things that really, I think, quite go a long way. One of the things that he said was Africa is at a crossroads, and he knows about it. And being a career diplomat, he's been in Africa, serving in Ethiopia and other countries for quite some time. So he knows the dynamics of the region. And the second thing that he said was that he was going to look at events in Africa through the windshield, not through the rear mirror. And I think that's a real fully loaded statement.
Yes. Yes, Ambassador, just hold your thoughts on that. We will come back to that discussion after this story from Uganda. Ugandan pop star turned lawmaker Bobi Wine, whose official name is Robert Kyagulanyi, has been greeted with tight security as he returned home from the United States. Kyagulanyi arrived at Entebbe this afternoon aboard a Kenya Airways. He was reportedly taken by authorities from the airport to a nearby police station, where he was held for about 3 hours before being taken home. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Media reports say crowds chanting slogans gathered at the police station holding Kyagulanyi. However, Uganda police spokesperson Emilian Kaima released a statement indicating Kyagulanyi was safely home. Kaima said police had provided the legislator with transport, escort and a lead car to his home in Magere. Earlier, police and the army were heavily deployed along the road leading to Entebbe International Airport to prevent crowds from forming. A Ugandan government spokesperson told VOA that tight security was needed because Wine supporters are violent. A number of politicians and journalists were stopped at roadblocks mounted at Kajansi, about 15 kilometers away from the airport. Those who insisted were arrested and briefly put behind bars. Alex Esagala is a journalist with Uganda's Daily Monitor newspaper.
I got lucky that there was someone I knew who told me to go back peacefully. Otherwise, I think it would have been something more than that. Yeah, so I had to stop and wait for my friends to come and join me from here in Kajansi.
International and local media say members of his band and his manager were arrested before his arrival. Although police had issued guidelines allowing Bobi Wine's close family members at the airport, his elder brother was barred. Paul Sentamu is one of Chagulanyi's brothers.
I was going to welcome my brother, but I had other news that my big brother, Ediwawe, has been arrested. So what should I expect if I go there? For now, I'm waiting for my brother here because I cannot go anywhere because they've deployed.
Medad Segona is a Ugandan legislator and Bobi Wine's lawyer. He expressed disappointment over what he called the militarization of Ugandan affairs.
We can resolve our political differences without involving the security forces. The more we involve security forces in the politics of our country, the more we risk the country, the more we risk our children. I am now angry that you can take my country to be a military barracks simply because one member of parliament is coming back, you know, from a trip where you forced him to go for treatment, then the rest of us must be prisoners in our country. It's a shame.
Semakula Lutamaguzi is another Ugandan legislator. He said that heavy security deployment infringes on Ugandans' enjoyment of their constitutional rights.
Is it within the constitution that we shouldn't welcome our comrades wherever they come from? So I'm just wondering why the state is panicking. But as a country, I know we have freedom of association, freedom of assembly, and shouldn't limit our colleagues, especially citizens of this country, from expressing their wishes, especially when they are doing it in a democratic manner.
The popular singer has been in the United States for medical attention over what he says was torture he was subjected to while he was in custody. In public appearances in the U.S., he has appeared badly injured. He and 33 others, including four legislators, are facing treason charges for allegedly pelting President Yoweri Museveni's convoy during campaigning in Uganda's Arua district. He is out of prison on bail, but will return to court on 1st October. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up is the Chinese battle for road construction deal in South Sudan, a fair deal. Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your greatest accomplishment in your community?
To see that women are empowered and to be independent and stand on their own. In my small way, I am doing this, but I want to extend it on a larger level.
I think for me, my greatest accomplishment would probably be picking up someone who doesn't have anything but has the intelligence and maybe probably sponsoring the person through school.
I'm training myself so that I can add value to my community and come back to tell them that money does not define where you go. Your determination is what counts.
I come from a village where young boys and girls do not take school seriously. And by seeing me, it's like they get some kind of motivation.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A Juba-based economic analyst says paying Chinese companies in crude oil to build roads across South Sudan does not favor the country. Information Minister Michael Makui says South Sudan will pay Chinese companies 10,000 barrels of crude oil per day for the duration of the contract. Onan Walter Solomon has this story for VOA from Juba.
Michael Makui confirmed yesterday to South Sudan in Focus that South Sudan's cabinet had agreed to support a deal President Salva Kiir reached with his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping to pay Chinese government-owned companies building in crude oil for building roads in South Sudan. University of Juba economics professor Mariola Woyol says that's not a good deal for South Sudan, noting that oil prices keep changing on the world market and therefore it would be hard to calculate how much the 10,000 barrels of crude oil are worth in dollars or pounds on any given day. He says it's also difficult to calculate much it would cost to build the roads China has agreed to construct across South Sudan.
I'm not sure whether it will be fair for us to pay in kind when the price of the oil is not fixed. Assuming the price of oil is $50 and we engage Chinese to take 10,000 barrels of crude, and in a few months' time the price of the barrel goes to, say, 100, we'll be paying double than what we agreed initially.
Makwei acknowledges that giving China 10,000 barrels a day translates into a lot of money.
10,000 drums per day is good money. It depends on the market price, because the market these days keeps on fluctuating, but it is rising these days.
Awol says the China-South Sudan agreement should have put a fixed value on a barrel of oil.
Paying Chinese in kind, in the long run you will be paying them a premium. You will be paying them more than what they deserve. But again, the point is, why paying in kind? We should have agreed to pay in monetary terms so that it is us to sell our oil first, and then we come with our money and pay the Chinese as well.
Makwei says cabinet ministers have already agreed to set aside 10,000 barrels of crude oil for the Chinese-owned road construction companies.
The value of this will be put in an escrow account in China, and based on this escrow account, the Chinese companies will be engaged. Payment to these companies will be dependent on the progress made on the ground and the directives of the government of South Sudan, but the money will be kept in China.
President Kiir has said that paying the Chinese companies in crude makes sense.
Turn to Cameroon, where Muslims and Christian clerics and leaders of all major denominations have jointly accused Cameroonians in the diaspora of funding crisis that has rocked the country's English-speaking regions for 2 years. The clerics are asking both military and armed groups to drop their guns and stop the killing, looting and burning of property. But the government says only the armed separatists should give up their guns. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Nous, leaders religieux du Cameroun, prions Allah, Dieu, le Très-Haut.
This is the voice of Sheikh Oumarou Malam, president of the Islamic Superior Council of Cameroon, speaking to a group of Christians and Muslims gathered at the Yaoundé headquarters of the Episcopal Conference of Cameroon Bishops. He says that as peace builders, Christians and Muslims should not be indifferent to the carnage that has been going on in the northwest and southwest regions of the Central African state. Sheikh Oumarou says the council he leads decided to come up with a joint declaration with Christians because, he says, everyone in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions has been affected by the crisis. Reverend Gustave Ebaye, a spokesman of the Council of Protestant Churches of Cameroon, SEPCA, read the declaration in which clerics accused Cameroonians living outside of their country of fueling the crisis.
We call on the diaspora to stop the hate speech communication that promotes violence, suspicion, and fear among the people of Cameroon. We call on the diaspora to participate in the political process of Cameroon using democratic and non-violent means. We call on the diaspora to respect the sacredness of human life and children's right to education. They should put an end to the trivialization of human dignity and the hostage-taking of schools. We call on those who finance the activities of armed groups to stop this dirty work that aims at destroying the natural fabric of Cameroon.
The declaration by the Episcopal Conference of Cameroon's Roman Catholic Bishops, the Council of Protestant Churches, SEPCA, and the Islamic Superior Council of Cameroon, which brings together all mosques and churches except Pentecostal denominations, calls on all political parties and the civil society to center their activities on bringing peace in the troubled regions. They are also calling on both the armed separatists and the military to lay down their weapons and stop the indiscriminate killing, kidnappings, looting and burning of public property and allow children to go to school.
That's Moki Edwin Kinzeka from Cameroon. If you have just joined us, I am in the studio here with Ambassador Philip Jada Natana, South Sudan's new ambassador to the United States. Ambassador Jada, welcome back. When we just went for the break, you were talking about one meeting you had, one discussion you had with a very senior official in the Trump administration. You told him, he told you that there are two things he's talking about. One is that Africa is at a crossroad. What were other things you discussed with him?
Well, in addition to what I've already mentioned, he's somebody who has been following keenly the situation in South Sudan, and he said he was really willing to open a new page and try to work with me as a representative of South Sudan here in Washington. But in addition to that, he also informed me that he's going to organize and there's going to be three high-level delegations trips that are going to take place in the next 1 month or two to South Sudan, and that would be to engage. But he also reiterated that in regard to the peace, because I had asked him, I said, you know, I've been hearing, from the media and reports that maybe the United States government is not in support of this peace process. And I try to really emphasize to him that I think in the interest of the people of South Sudan, we would really want the United States government to support this peace process, because war has been costly. I mean, he has the figures. That's something that nobody nobody doesn't know. And at this time, I think the price for peace is more affordable to us to pay than any continuous war. And he said, yeah, they looked at the agreement. And now, after critically looking at the agreement, they have seen that actually there are some aspects of the agreement which are good, you know, for the people of South Sudan. And he talked about governance, and he talked about the demarcation of the boundaries and the states. And he said these are very positive things that are in agreement, and they will be looking closely at that agreement. But he said, you know, whatever it is, the United States government is with the people of South Sudan.
Yeah, let's look at what is happening in South Sudan. The reports that we get from South Sudan are not very encouraging right after the warring parties sign a peace agreement. What is happening in Kajukeji? Who is fighting who?
Well, as you know, this agreement, of course, the way that it has been signed and negotiated, there was a lot of pressure, you know, to the negotiating sides. And you know that not everybody or all of these parties signed the agreement in Khartoum, and these groups that didn't sign made it very clear that they are not going to be part of this agreement, because they felt that this agreement did not address the grievances that they had. But you know, with even our previous agreement during the CPA, and when that agreement was welcomed by everybody, and we went to Khartoum and we became part of the government, and even when we were in Juba, there were attacks, not actually in very far-fetched places, but in places like Sherikard and all of these kind of things. So I think we don't expect that this agreement is going to act like a magic stick, that once you strike it, and then it's all going to be very peaceful. There are going to be people who would want to spoil. There would want people who would want to say, no, this agreement doesn't address us, and they will come. And I think the best thing to look at now is really to look at the enforcement mechanism that should be put in place. And I think if the region, and IGAD especially, is really keen that this agreement should actually hold, then I think they should speed up with deploying the monitors on the ground, such that we don't have accusations and counter accusations, so that we hold people who violate this ceasefire agreement accountable, and with punitive measures as it has been put into place.
Yeah, the American people worked very, very much with the people of South Sudan during your difficult times. I mean, this is not new to someone like you who has been part of the struggle to independence. And now some of your officials have turned their guns on the United States. Information Minister Michael Makuei has been on record saying U.S. wants to topple the government of President Kiir. Why would you accuse the U.S. of trying to topple your government?
Well, I think the statement that you actually quoted now is from a senior official from the South Sudan. an information minister, and as a politician, you know, I think he's at liberty to make statements. And as you know, as an ambassador, you know, I'm a civil servant, you know, so I think my role is to defend the interests of the government, that's first, but also to promote our relationship with the host country, like when I was in South Africa, and the same thing like I'm here. So I will not be in liberty, you know, to comment on the statement made by Minister Makuei.
Hey, let's go back to your role. Your job is to defend the government, as you said right now. And the role of the media is to report on events happening in South Sudan in a very accurate manner. And we've been doing that. Why is the government in Juba hostile to the media?
Well, I think Tanza, as you, I think my background is also been media, and we have always looked at the media as a mirror that reflects on what is happening in the society. And I think one of the principles for which we fought for during the time of the liberation is freedom of expression, freedom of reporting and media and all of those kind of things, you know. But I think you have been to Juba yourself and you have seen the level of reporting that has happened with some of our colleagues in the media. You know, you've looked at newspapers that always just report stories, but they don't balance, they do cut and paste, they do all kind of things, you know. So I think the biggest problem that we have in South Sudan is really lack of professionalism. And I think what we need now in South Sudan is really just for us to go into dialogue and try to root out those people who don't report accurately, and then so that we emphasize professionalism. And I think there's no need for us as people of government and the media really to be at each other's throat fighting.
And final question here, Ambassador Jada, just I give you 1 minute to wrap up on that. What is your perception of the South Sudanese diaspora in the United States?
Well, I think we had a history of where the diaspora played a very important role. But I think whatever had happened during the South Sudan, unfortunately, has divided our diaspora here. I haven't had any engagement with them. But I think that in spite of whatever has happened and the division among the diaspora, really we have a role to try to bring the diaspora together so that they could support not just the peace process, but the reconstruction efforts and the building that is going to take place in South Sudan. So my coming here will be really to engage with them and try to listen to them and see some of their grievances, and we see how we can work together with them to help the situation in South Sudan.
Yeah, well, Ambassador Philip Jadanatana, time is against us. It was a pleasure having you in Studio 14. Thank you for coming in to talk to us about South Sudan. That was Ambassador Philip Nathana Jada, the new South Sudanese ambassador to the United States. That brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with Kang JJ singing in his native Nuer language. Been listening to Kang JJ singing in his native Nuer language. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus.